and welcome to the Vookcast, Australia's Nintendo podcast. I'm Angelo Valdivia, and with me this week are Oliver Brandt.
Hey, Angelo.
And Luke Henderson.
Howdy.
Thanks, guys, for joining me this week. The last couple of weeks has seen a huge blowout of indie game announcements. An OG Sega icon is getting a remake. EA is working to bring more games to the Switch, plus all the latest Pokemon news. But first, the number of Nintendo Network IDs compromised in last April's security breach have reached 300,000 accounts. So for those who remember back in early April, there was a breach on Nintendo servers of NNID accounts being compromised, specifically the ones that were brought over or combined with the Wii U and 3DS NNIDs over to the Switch. Nintendo had announced that there were 160,000 at the time accounts that were compromised, and all of those were automatically had their passwords reset. So people had to reset their passwords, and it was highly recommended people enable two-factor authentication. But since then, it's been discovered that another 140,000 users have been compromised at that point, with roughly about 1% of affected accounts being used for unauthorized purchases, but most, if not all, by now have been refunded. So this is kind of a big deal, but not quite anywhere near as big as, you know, the PlayStation Network one that happened way back in 2011, I think it was, which had millions of accounts, or 1.7 million or something like that, accounts compromised at the time, with all sorts of details leaked and put all over the place and things. This one seems to be much more contained, and Nintendo seemed to really jump on top of this one, and everyone's passwords were reset and things like that. Do we think this will continue to be a problem down the track? Do you think, you know, about a month and a half after the original story went out, another 140,000 were discovered to be compromised? Do you guys think that we're going to be seeing this a little further down the track? We'll probably get like another tens of thousands announced or something like that.
I think it's probably pretty likely that there are more accounts that have sort of, you know, flown under the radar. It's not a particularly widespread, issue. Like, it is, you know, 300,000 accounts, which does seem like a lot. But when you consider that that's accounts for all of, like, Wii U and 3DS, which all have to have a unique NNID attached to it, it's, you know, at most 1% of all NNID accounts, which, like, in terms of, like, security breaches, that's, you know, kind of the best you could hope for. They've seemed to be just completely on top of it. They're, you know, immediately locking down any accounts that they recognize. They have, as far as I know, because I actually do know somebody that was affected by this, refunded, like, pretty much immediately when they called out Nintendo after they got the email. So they've been just really on top of it, which is good to see from a company that they're actually doing something and not just, you know, floundering around and saying, yeah, you know, we'll have this sorted out in 6 months or whatever.
And it's also kind of reassuring that they didn't have to lock the network down, much like PlayStation did 9 years ago for like 2 months or anything like that, that they were able to sort of get on top of this without cutting off their own service or doing anything like that.
Yeah, and like it is important to note that like these aren't Switch accounts, so if you've just got a Switch and you have never connected it to a 3DS or a Wii U, then like you're completely fine. There hasn't been any sort of data breach or any breach of any kind for Nintendo Switch accounts. It's purely just NNIDs, so 3DS, Wii U, and yeah, unfortunately, primarily those ones that were linked to Switch accounts, which is where a lot of the damage has been done. I know that anecdotally, when my friend's account was compromised, the person who gained access to the account was pretty much in it just for the V-Bucks, which sort of tells you about like the motives and sort of caliber behind these attacks. It's like it's not some like, you know, seedy dark hacker group that's trying to take all your games and stuff. It's purely just, you know, people trying to add V-Bucks to an account and sell it. Like it's not like it doesn't strike me as, you know, gigantic cyber attack so much as like, you know, a bunch of people with nothing else to do.
We're talking Dr. Evil level of evil, not Dr. No level of evil.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Very good. All right, I'm going to handball this one over to Luke. Luke, you're up with this story.
Yeah, so something a little lighter in the news is LEGO finally detailed all the LEGO Mario sets that are coming. So we obviously knew about the starter kit that was obviously announced back in April. We knew about the Bowser Castle expansion because that was on the US LEGO store. And then in May, we learned about the power-up packs, which is, you know, a little set of overalls for Mario to wear to give him new abilities. But this week, they announced a whopping 13 new sets or pieces for it. The sets range in terms of price from $30 all the way up to $100, depending on what you're looking for. And we've got, you know, Desert Pokey expansion, Womp's Lava Trouble, Piranha Plant Power Slide, which is one we knew was coming, but they'd never detailed it. It was one of those, you know, screenshots of a box art of somebody's computer sort of thing. Boomer Bill Barrage, not Bullet Bill, not Banzai Bill, but Boomer Bill, which is a new thing. Mario and Yoshi's Mario House and Yoshi expansion, Toad Treasure Hunt, and this is Bowser Castle we knew about, coming in at the most expensive at $150. So obviously, to buy all of the expansion sets without any of the extra add-ons, you're looking at about $750 to buy the base kit and then all the bits and pieces to make one massive set, which is insane.
It's huge cost. I mean, like, LEGO is expensive anyways. I mean, to buy their sets, you know, they're upwards of hundreds of dollars and things like that. But yeah, I mean, let's face it, people who are most likely to collect this are going to be, you know, giant adult children like us anyways. But, you know, for a kid to get this for Christmas or something like that for one or two sets, like, that's like at least $200 or something like that. And they're not particularly large sets either. They're really cute and they look fantastic. And I'm looking at the screenshots now and, you know, they look absolutely amazing, but they're not huge sets either.
No, and I think that's probably part of the charm is that because they are small in terms of their overall size and because you can lay them out however you want, I think that's probably where the appeal comes in, not in the overall size of them. To be honest, I'm glad they're not massive sets because I've got enough Lego already that I don't have space for more. But I do like the fact that you can, you know, take any of the pieces from these sets and just throw it on your existing Lego. So you could have Mario run through, you know, the Helicarrier from Avengers. As long as you've got the little pieces that he needs to stand on to collect a coin or two, you know, you can do that. So that's what I think is the big appeal here, is that once you get that starter kit, it ties into any Lego you've got. So you can have Mario and Luke Skywalker battling Darth Vader before Bowser jumps in at the end, you know. So that could be cool. But yeah, the overall cost of the sets is a little much, but it's Lego. We all knew it was going to be expensive.
Mm. I mean, yeah, it is worth noting as well that, like, these are just like regular old Lego bits. Some of them are, but, like, you know, enemies and as you mentioned, the tiles that Mario jumps on, these are, like, I assume they're using NFC. I don't think we've had actual confirmation of how the technology works.
It's a color. It's a light sensor.
Oh, a light sensor. Reads color. That's a really interesting way to do that. But that pretty much invalidates everything I said then. So they're not smart pieces at all. They're just pieces of Lego. It's very expensive. Yeah.
Yeah. A few years ago, when Lego got a new CEO, this was maybe the late 90s, early 2000s, Lego were custom making pieces for every set. It's like you came up with a new Lego set, they'd make a custom piece for it. The problem was it upped the price of their production astronomically. So he ended up turning around and saying, no, we're going to have the base mons and you have to build from that. So when you see people building things, you know, they've always got the bright colors on the inside before you get to the exterior coloring. It's because they're using all the leftover pieces from just the generic ones. So there are a lot of custom pieces here, like the toad, the mushroom, sorry, I should say, the, you know, the Bowser piece, the Koopa shell. So there's a lot of custom pieces that they've made, but the bulk of it is just generic Lego, just, you know, arranged in a different way, which is still pretty cool. But it does come back to, you know, they will work with most any other Lego sets.
Yeah, it's interesting that they haven't incorporated NFC in these, considering that, you know, there was that huge push from Amiibo way back in the day and things like that. And it would be nice to be able to cross these over. I mean, the Toys to Life genre is pretty much dead at this point, and Amiibo is really the only thing kind of carrying it in some way. But it would have been good to at least, you know, be able to scan in a Lego Mario figure and potentially get something like a trophy or something like that in Smash, or, I don't know, something silly like that in some game down the track.
Yeah, I think it's probably because the color sensor technology is really power friendly. So you can run a power a color sensor on very little power. And because obviously Mario, the figurine, has Bluetooth in it as well to connect to your phone to transfer your scores and all the bits and pieces. And it's got accelerometers to check the angles that you're moving them at for things. I think they went with the one that was going to be the give most playtime for the kids, rather than, you know, for the few people that would scan in the Mario figure to Smash Brothers. I think that's why they went that way. I don't know, but that's what I assume.
Fair enough. Did you also mention, I'm completely spaced out from remember that, did you also mention the power-up packs and things like that as well, and the character packs?
Well, the power-up packs we knew about back in May. They're the ones, you know, the Fire Mario, the Cat Mario suits. They're fun little add-ons. They're not going to add a huge amount of variety to the levels, but the character packs are the ones I'm most excited for because they're $6 each. The downside is they are blind bags, but you know, you buy a bag and you can get a Boo, or you can get a Fuzzy, or a Bullet Bill, or a Blooper, and then, you know, it's just a little figurine, kind of like the minifig blind bags that most people who buy Lego would be aware of. So it's a nice little touch, and it's probably one of the ways most people are going to add to their collection, buying a base pack and then maybe one expansion, and then, you know, a few of these to sort of add a little bit more variety to their stages.
It's interesting that the Bullet Bill character pack looks different to the Boomer Bill that you can get in the Boomer Bill Barrage expansion set.
Well, that's the thing. So Bullet Bill is obviously what we see in the character pack. Banzai Bill is what the Boomer Bill set is called in Japan. It's called the Banzai Bill set. But in the US and the rest of, you know, the world, it's called Boomer Bill. A lot of people are like, is this a new character? Is this something we're going to see in maybe one of the Mario games coming this year? Honestly, no idea. But there was also speculation that it was called Boomer Bill because they didn't like putting the word bullet on their packaging because it's Lego.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually written on the box anyway. So, yeah, the name change is going to confuse a lot of people for no actual reason that we're aware of.
Yeah.
I think it's probably just to make it a bit more advertising friendly, like.
Probably.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a weird change, but it's Lego, so what do you expect?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, moving on from Lego, let's get into the giant pile of announcements that came over the last couple of weeks. Pretty much starting off with a whole, like, wave of indie games that have been announced, some of which being things like Serial Cleaners, Space Crew, Gonna 2, Source of Madness, Morbid the Seven Acolytes, Doors of Insanity, Scourge Bringer, No Place for Bravery, Fae Tactics, Hotshot Racing, Dusk Haven, Shadow Man Remastered, plus a whole bunch more, for a complete list of announcements that were made over the last couple of weeks. Do check out Vux.net or take a look at the show notes at the bottom of the podcast at the end of the show. But one that really got me excited, particularly being a little Sega boy back in the day, was that Alex Kidd in Miracle World DX was announced, which will be a complete remake of the original Sega Master System game from the mid to late 80s. I'm very excited about this because it was the very first video game that I ever played, seeing as the Sega Master System 2 was the first console that I ever owned and played, and it came built in to the system at the time. So I'm very, very keen for this. Alex Kidd was never a particularly popular platformer. It was in that sort of awkward period where Sega was trying to really make mascots for their systems and didn't really quite pan out until Sonic came along in 1990. But you know, Alex Kidd was kind of their flagship platformer series for a while, trying to compete with Mario, and Miracle World was the first in the series. So do keep an eye on that one. That one looks absolutely incredible. It is being done by studio called Jenkin Team, which is kind of funny, I think, the name. but yeah, it's published by Merge Games, who also recently helped put out Streets of Rage 4, which is another really popular remake of a series that, you know, was great in arcades and on Sega platforms and things like that way back in the day too. Yeah, what about you? How do you guys feel about this? Are you guys keen for more remasters of really old franchises that haven't got the, you know, the sequel treatment in a very long time, like something like Wonder Boy, Dragon's Trap, that kind of stuff?
I mean, I think it's great, especially because like a lot of these games have retro modes where they, you know, try to get as close to the original gameplay as possible as well, which is just a really cute and nice thing to do. Apparently, this is just what I've been told from somebody who knows one of the developers. Like, this started as a fan game. So it's just like them, you know, making this cute like homage to Alex Kidd and Miracle World on their own time, and yeah, it's obviously become official since, which is just a really cool thing. Like, we know that Sega is pretty big on hiring fans to do projects. Like Sonic Mania was made by I can't remember the name of the studio. It's just completely blanking on me, but that was, you know, somebody who made it, you know, his own engine for like porting Sonic games over to other platforms, which is just like a super cool thing to do. I don't have much experience with Alex Kidd and Miracle World. I have played it, but I played more of the sequel on the Sega Mega Drive / Genesis, which I've heard is a little bit more solid, but like goes in a completely different direction. So I'm interested to see, you know, where it all began.
What about you, Luke? How do you feel?
I mean, I remember playing Alex Kidd, or Alex the Kid, depending on who you speak to, back at my cousin's house when I was like 7 or 8, because he had the Sega and I had the Nintendo, but that's as most exposure I've ever got to that property. It was just, you know, playing the first level over and over again anytime I went to visit them. So, but don't be wrong, I'm very excited for it because it does look cool, and Merge Games, I honestly think they're starting to rival someone like Team 17 in the quality of games that they're making. So I think those guys backing it are going to do a really good job with it. Plus, this is, what, the third or fourth game that's had this sort of exaggerated cartoon art style, like Wonder Boy, I think Lizard Man was the one, or it might be related to it, and then obviously Streets of Rage 4. So it should be very good. And I honestly, the indies in general, a lot of them, like Hot Shot Racing, I played months ago on Xbox, and it's just like Daytona Racing, but, you know, a bit more modernish. Shadow Man remastered, I'm hanging for, because I love Shadow Man. I love that game. The second one, not so much. The first one, yes. Second one, no. So yeah, there's a lot of games that have been announced over the past week that I'm really excited for.
Yeah, I think it's really great that a lot of indies who are looking to make their mark are being given the opportunity to remaster and reinvigorate new life into these classic franchises, particularly Sega ones, you know, because before the Mega Drive, I mean, Sega wasn't really a big household console. You know, the NES was much more popular than the Master System was until the Mega Drive came along. That was the one that had that huge marketing, like, reinvention in the early 90s and stuff, and then pretty much took over or took on Nintendo pretty hardcore against the Super Nintendo and stuff. So a lot of those old franchises from the 80s and stuff kind of get missed a little bit. So, you know, like your Wonder Boys, your Alex Kidds and all those kinds of things. And yeah, it's really great that, yeah, as Ollie mentioned, Sonic Mania, and you mentioning, Luke, you know, Streets of Rage and things like that as well. Like, it's great to see that indies are being given the opportunity to remaster these really quite important franchises. Maybe not relevant anymore, but they're definitely important for video game history. And games like Alex Kidd, for example, are ridiculously hard. Again, as you mentioned, Luke, like, I've played that first level a million times because I could only ever pass like the second or third level maybe 5 or 6 times in my life when I was that young. And the only way that I actually finished the game was on a hacked PSP that I had back, you know, 13 years ago that had state saves and things like that. I was just save scumming my way up to the top and doing the stupid rock, paper, scissors boss fights and things like that. Like, I'm really curious to see a modernized version of this game, and yeah, to really get into the incredible art style that the game has now, this hand-drawn art style and just updated music and everything. I'm really, really keen for this.
And the fact that you could swap back and forth between the old school and the new school.
Absolutely.
Which is becoming a big trend lately when they do remasters. They're like, you know, we know you like the old one, so you can play that way, or you can have the new fancy, which is something I'm enjoying.
What would be the first game that sort of do that? I'm recalling Halo's remaster from like 2010 or something like that.
No, before that, Monkey Island.
Right, of course. Because you could switch between the
on PC and Xbox 360, yeah. You can go back and forth between the old and the new. So, okay. And it was really helpful because sometimes you're playing in the old style, some of the puzzles were a bit harder to work out. But in the new style, they made them a bit clearer. So some of the objects you had to interact with. But yeah, that was the first one that ever did it. And it was a big thing, and people were like, but why? Why give people access to the old game? Why not just keep it to the new? But yeah, Halo's done it. Command & Conquer just recently did it. Wonder Boy did it, I think, from memory.
Yeah.
So there's been a few of them that have done it. And sometimes, you know, you just want to throw back to the old style just to see how, you know, does it look as good as I remember, or, you know, whatever the case may be. So I really appreciate the effort that devs go to when they do this.
For sure. All right, we're running out of time here. Let's get into a new release by Nintendo that no one saw coming, called Jump Rope Challenge, which was a small game made by a small group of Nintendo developers who were, you know, kind of stuck at home in isolation in Japan, weren't able to really go out and do much fitness. So they developed a small project among themselves and put it up on the eShop, which is just a small skipping rope game where you use the Joy-Con's motion controls to emulate jumping up and down, and you kind of just do it for points and things. And it's basically meant to be done in a routine that you do, you know, every day or something like that, just to get yourself moving. It was announced and released in a surprise Twitter announcement by Nintendo on June 16. But interestingly enough, it will be removed from the eShop on September 30. So it's a bit of an odd thing, a bit of an oddity among Nintendo releases, just circumstantially in general for this kind of game. But it's also kind of a really cool idea that, you know, some small devs at a big company were just like, yeah, let's do this small project. Oh, hey, this is actually not too bad. Let's, you know, iron it out a little more and just put it up and let everyone play it. So yeah, have you guys given this one a shot?
I did, but like, I've got a bad knee, so it was not a great idea, but it is just absolutely adorable. It is, the art style is super cute. It just, everything about it is just super wholesome and nice.
Yeah, cool. I haven't played it yet. I have it, but I haven't played it. I just think it's one of those things where you're like, really, Nintendo did that? Like, you know, you expect them to do other things, but to shadow drop a game that, you know, a couple of members of their own staff made, you know, at home sort of things, like, that doesn't seem like a Nintendo thing. So, you know, it's a very cool little thing for them to do.
Putting out for free,
you know, like, yeah, free, entirely free. But you do have to wonder, like, you know, did they have to jump through many hoops at Nintendo to do this? Because, like, as we know, like, Nintendo's processes are, you know, extremely old-fashioned and strict. So, you know, they tend to run over everything with a fine-tooth comb. So I'd be interested to know sort of the story behind this game and, you know, how it actually got in front of Nintendo.
I mean, the thing I like to point out is this is now the first official Nindie, because it's a Nintendo-made but indie game. So it is the first official Nindie. But I also hope this is the bit of a start of a trend from Nintendo where we see, you know, 5, 10 man or 10 people groups, you know, coming together and saying, hey, I've got an idea, can you help me make it? You know, get a programmer in, get an artist in, get a musician in, and start just throwing together maybe a prototype and just seeing if we can build something out from that, because that's how a lot of these games like Snake Pass, which launched back on the Switch when the Switch released, that was one of those games where they, you know, all the devs from the studio just broke off into teams and started prototyping, and this was the one that everyone thought was the best, and they made a full game out of it. So I'm hoping this is the start of a few more things like this from Nintendo. But, you know, if it's a one and done, something,
that's something that developers at Game Freak, who make Pokemon, do as well. They have this thing called Project Gear, which is a bit of a weird name, but, you know, you do you. Where basically if you come up with an idea for a game and you can get two producer level staff to sign off on it. You can have a team of up to 15 people to work on it. And that's how we got things like Little Town Hero and Harmonite and stuff like that. It's a really interesting way to do it. And like, obviously they're still working on Pokemon games, all of those stuff. But like, I think Game Freak saw the need to like, you know, these people have been working on Pokemon, you know, for all of their professional lives. It just the opportunity to work on something small and different and a little more focused is a really interesting idea. And I'd really love to see Nintendo like open up with a similar program, because I think it's just a really cool idea to give your developers, you know, just something new to do.
I'd love to see them take Mario and say, look, you can take Mario, make a 10-level game, and, you know, they just throw it under the banner of Warp Pipe Adventures or something, and all of a sudden you've got, you know, five different Mario games that, you know, may not be anything amazing, but, you know, just for a chance for the developers to get out there and try different things without having to worry about, you know, Shigeru Miyamoto coming down and flipping the tea table or something on them.
Yeah. Call it like Mushroom Dreams or something. He just has a bad mushroom and he goes on these little side adventures. But I think I still think it's really interesting that the game will be taken off the eShop on September 30, though. So I'm really curious to know what the circumstances around that is.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably like the weirdest part of it all, is that like there's not really any reason for it to be pulled. Like, I don't see why it couldn't just stay up after September 30. And, like, I guess, like, maybe they want to push people towards Ring Fit Adventure instead. And, you know, maybe they have some other sort of quality of life fitness stuff happening. But, like, it's a free game. Like, it's not taking away from anything like that. So it's a little bit weird that, yeah, it is just disappearing on September 30.
And let's face it.
And I imagine, yeah.
So I was going to say, let's face it, game is probably a bit of a kinder way to say what this is. It's an experiment. It's a prototype. It's not a traditional sort of game. So
it's like an app,
essentially. Yeah.
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 But I imagine after September 30th, there will be many, many Switch consoles on eBay with like rare deleted game.
Jump Rope PT Challenge 2 is coming on October 1st. You wait and see.
The PT of Nintendo Switch. Yeah, this is pure speculation, but I also just wonder if maybe this is more like a testing bed of other projects that other developers have put together, and maybe there'll be like a collection of them that they'll probably incorporate this in some form in for like a $5 pack. You can get like five or six more of these types of things.
Well, it's also worth noting that this is Nintendo's first in-house Unity game, on a console, at least. We don't really know how much of Super Mario Run was made in-house. We know that it was a collaborative effort, so, like, you know, we can sort of count it. But this is the first game that was actually built in Unity from Nintendo themselves, which I think is a really interesting thing to note, just because, like, it shows that Nintendo is sort of experimenting more with other game engines that aren't, you know, their in-house engine.
Mm. Which I think that is probably one of the cool things to take away, because every time they make a game, it's their own engine, and their own engines are fine. We play games on them all the time, but, you know, there's not a lot of value in them just reinvesting in engines that only they're going to be using. So if they start using more external engines, it could be better for us in the long run.
I think because, like,
oh,
I was just saying, like, who's to say, you know, they're using Unity or Unreal and they notice, like, hey, this doesn't actually interact with the Switch in such a nice way. You know, they can pass that on to the people who make Unity or Unreal or any of these other engines and say, like, hey, this isn't, you know, working as well as it could be. Here's how you fix it. And I think, like, that's a really, it could lead to a lot better optimization of other games.
This is just me thinking about this. It could be less of what Nintendo decided to do in terms of Unity. It could just be the fact that, you know, these devs would just have Unity at home, and they'd probably easy for them to collaborate and pull, you know, put assets up online and share data back and forth and things by using something like Unity. And it's only a smaller game as well, so probably just something that they were able to just make really quickly and put out. And maybe there's some sort of contractual thing about using Nintendo software outside of work projects and things like that anyways, and then they had to just kind of like pitch this game to Nintendo or something to get it out, which is probably why it has a limited release.
For sure. But, like, again, like, it does show that, like, Unity Nintendo developers at least are, you know, at least well-versed in Unity, or well-versed enough in Unity to push a game like this. Sure. So, you know, it's something.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move over to EA. So following on the trend of announcements, EA has announced that it has plans for 7 Switch releases to come over the next 12 months. Now, before getting too excited, the games that have been, that we know so far that'll be coming are Burnout Paradise, which has already been announced for quite a while. Apex Legends, and which will be coming... Oh, sorry.
Burnout came out the other day too.
Yep.
So out of the 7 games, one of them is already out.
Yep, and we'll get into that as well later on in the show. Apex Legends will be coming to the Switch in spring, our spring. We'll also have cross-play with all major platforms, and we'll also have motion controls, which I don't know how to feel about that. But going on, we've also got Lost in Random by Zoink Games and FIFA 21 Legacy Edition. So there are still a few more games to be announced over the next 12-month period. Guys, what do you think about this? Luke, let's start with you, seeing as you were mentioning some Burnout there.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, this is typical EA where they've said, oh, we've got 7 games coming to Switch in 12 months. It's like, cool. One of them is out the next day. For us, it was out that day. So we saw the EA play Friday morning. Burnout was out that day. Lost in Random is technically not an EA game. It's EA Originals, which it's all owned by Zoink, and they've brought plenty of games to Switch already. So if you go to the Switch page on the EA website, there's 6 games listed. 3 are FIFA, 1 is Burnout, and 2 are EA Originals. So the EA Originals thing is cool, but they're not actually made by EA. So this is a bit of a cop-out there. And then obviously FIFA Legacy Edition, like, I don't know how many times they can reskin FIFA 19 at this point, but that's what they're doing again.
We'll find out. Yeah,
but like Apex Legends is kind of like the interesting one there, because like I never in a million years would have thought that would be running on Switch.
Yeah, it's quite big and looks quite it is quite complex in terms of what's going on in the game as well. So yeah,
there was a thing, I think it was back in late March, early April last year, not long after the game did release, where somebody said, "What about bringing it to Switch?" And the Respawn devs, I think it was on a GameSpot stream or a Giant Bomb stream, laughed. They laughed at the camera. Because they're like, no, there's no way this is coming to Switch. Switch can't handle our game. And off they went. And, you know, here we are just over 12 months later where it's announced it's coming to Switch. Mm. So I thought that was quite hilarious that, you know, the developers sort of mocked it to begin with, and now they've done the work to bring it over.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this game actually runs. Fortnite isn't great. It's not terrible, but it's not great. Funnily enough, my Switch can run Fortnite better than my PC can, though, so there is that.
But, like, you know, Fortnite is in an engine that was actually, you know, is designed to support Switch at this point. Yep. Like, Apex Legends is in a very modified version of the Source engine, which is quite a CPU-heavy engine, which, you know, given that we know that, like, the CPU is kind of the bottleneck on the Switch, like, it doesn't bode well. But, I mean, clearly, they're confident enough with it to push it out. I think EA expects that it could make a lot of money, and the only way that they're going to do that is if it's at least half decent. So,
yeah,
and we'll have to see. But like, yeah,
I do like the fact that it also has crossplay with, you know, the PC versions on Steam and Origin, Xbox and PlayStation. So it's not one of those ones where, what was it, Call of Duty Black Ops 2? I think it was on the Wii U. You know, it had multiplayer, but there was never anyone online to play it because hardly anyone had the game. So now, even if, you know, you and maybe 2 friends have it on Switch, you'll find millions of players on PC or PS4 or Xbox One to play against. So, you know, even with that in mind, even if it's not the best looking version, you know, you still have people to play with, which is probably the more important thing. If this didn't have crossplay, it wouldn't be worth putting on Switch, I don't think.
Yeah, I think for these larger free-to-play battle royale games, like, you're basically dead on arrival if you don't support crossplay at this point, because as we've seen, people don't play free-to-play games on just one platform, especially that are as big as this. They'll play it. They'll probably main it on like PC or something like that, and then they'll have a second system that they'll switch to or something like that as well, and buying, you know, skins and all sorts of, you know, booster packs and things like that. They all go to one singular account at this point, and it's just not economical whatsoever for them to fracture their markets and have people only buy content for one system and then only buy it for another system if they want to play on two systems. It just makes no sense in that regard. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they would have had to have made this crossplay with everything else. They would have had no choice, really.
I mean, as a studio, EA are doing crossplay across the board, so it makes sense that this joins it as well. Which again, good news.
Yeah, is Apex Legends on mobile yet? Do we know that?
No, and there's no plans for it to come to mobile either.
So that's interesting.
There were like rumors sort of swirling around about it, but I don't think they really amounted to anything.
I think the beginning with Apex Legends is Fortnite is a very best way to put it. The nicest way to put it is it's a spray and pray type of game where you don't have to be accurate because you can do the building, you can do all the other sort of stuff. Whereas Apex is very twitchy. You know, you can run along a wall, dive down the ground, slide up, grapple up to something, and spin around, all this sort of stuff. It's very movement based, and I don't think mobile with a touchscreen would be as responsive as it needs to be. So anyone hanging for touch controls on Apex Legends on Switch is probably not going to be happy.
All right, and finally, in more games blowouts, we have Pokemon. So a couple of days ago, Nintendo or Pokemon Company had a big stream announcing a whole bunch of new Pokemon games. The first or the most important of which that anyone could argue is new Pokemon Snap, which is a sequel slash spiritual successor to the original N64 game. It will be coming to Switch, but at the moment, there's no release date yet. We'll talk about all of these after going through them. We've also got Pokemon Smile, which is a new iOS and Android app aiming to help kids brush their teeth, which, kind of shocked people at first. I think it was like one of the first things that was announced. I didn't watch the stream myself, but it was like the first thing that got shown. Everyone's kind of like, what the hell is this? But it looks super cute and, it's for the kids. Make sure their teeth are clean. Then we've also got Pokemon Cafe Mix, which is a new Switch and mobile puzzle game coming on Wednesday, June 24, which will just be a couple of days after this podcast coming out. It'll be free to play. And then at the end of the stream, the Pokemon Company's president, Tsunekazu Ishihara, also mentioned that there'll be more news to come this week about a new big project that's currently in the works. So, there are still plenty more Pokemon to come. But guys, let's break some of these down. Let's start with the top. Let's start with new Pokemon Snap. Did anyone expect them? Like, everyone hoped, but did anyone actually expect them to announce a new Pokemon Snap?
No, I mean, like, it was like one of those things where it's like, it's been 21 years. We can pretty much write it off as never, ever happening.
It's been 84 years.
but like, we had, the Switch release and everybody was like, oh yeah, that'd be perfect for Pokemon Snap. And then like, it didn't happen. And then like, we had, the Labo camera and everybody was like, oh yeah, this is it. This is when we'll finally get a new Pokemon Snap. And then like, nothing happened. So everybody had sort of just given up on the Switch ever getting any sort of Pokemon Snap, sort of maybe hoping for, a Nintendo Switch Online, inclusion in the retro games. But like, this is kind of huge. Like, it just came out of nowhere, and it's just like, oh yeah, by the way, we have this stream happening in like a couple days, you might want to check it out. And we're like, oh yeah, all right, it'll just be like going over the new DLC stuff. And then it's like, oh whoops, new Pokemon Snap, here we go.
Yeah, I agree, but I seriously think that Nintendo really, really missed the mark with a new Pokemon Snap back on the Wii U. I think that system would have been perfect for an on-rails photography game, because you'd have the main screen being your main viewport for what's going on, and that would just be on-rails, and then you have the Wii U controller where you can then look around the place with the accelerometers and take photos that way. I think that would have been the perfect outcome, but, Nintendo Switch, sure, I'll take that one as well.
I do find it interesting that this is being developed by Bandai Namco, who Nintendo have gone to a lot lately. They did co-development on Smash. They were doing development on Metroid Prime 4 before it got rebooted.
Yeah, that partnership seems to be very fruitful lately.
Yeah, and then obviously Bandai support Switch a hell of a lot on their own. So
yeah,
I'm interested to see. Obviously, the visuals are a bit iffy at this point. I don't know if that's because it's just from early footage from the game, but hopefully they get it cleaned up a little bit. But I remember renting this from Blockbuster. So I'm showing my age here, renting games from Blockbuster. I rented it. Jesus. When did this come out? 98?
99.
I
remember renting it in school for a sleepover, and we played it like all night long. We just played Pokemon Snap, trying to, you know, okay, maybe if we throw an apple first, you know, we'll lure a Pokemon out, and then if we throw an apple over here, we'll get, you know, just trying to all those different combinations. So I'm excited to see what this one does.
For sure. And it's not quite clear if this is going to be like, you know, a remake of the original or something like that. I mean, the first area, like that sort of beach area that's shown in the trailer, looks like the first area in the original game as well. You know, right up to the moment where they take a close-up photo of Pikachu and things like that. So it'll be interesting to see if they do have some of those older stages, because the original game still holds up. I mean, I bought it on the Wii U, what, 4 years ago or something, like 4 or 5 years ago when it was on the eShop. And my girlfriend, who at the time was just starting to get into Pokemon, she'd played some Pokemon games before, but she didn't really get into Pokemon until Pokemon Go came out, because that was a much more engaging game for her. She could take it out, play it at the bus stop, all those kinds of things, and it had a little more little more going on for her in that regard. And then bringing Pokemon Snap in front of her from there, because then she has a point of reference, she has a connection to some of these Pokemon that she's recognizing now, was a much more engaging way for her to play. And the game still holds up in the way that you can play it. Like, it's very, very simplistic. It's an on-rails shooter, but, you know, instead of shooting guns, you're shooting photos. And there are a lot of secrets in it and stuff. It doesn't feature the full 151 Pokemon or anything like that. It's only like 60 Pokemon thereabouts. Yeah. So, you know, it's smaller, much more achievable. It only takes like maybe 3 or 4 hours to go from beginning to end, you know, maybe a little bit longer than that to get all the Pokemon and stuff. So it's a really good self-contained Pokemon game. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with that, with the new Pokemon Snap. Like, do we've obviously got more recent Pokemon in there. If you watch the trailer, there's like a Torterra and things like that. But yeah, I'm really curious to see what they do with it, if it just has some of the older stages, some of the older secrets and things, or if it just goes completely... You get in a completely different direction.
Yeah, so it does say on the website that it's inspired by the Nintendo 64 games. So I expect that we'll see like some of the stages, but I think we're definitely going to see a whole bunch of new stuff as well. I personally am not like the biggest fan of the on-rails stuff. I think it would have been really cool to see like a Pokemon Snap where you're in sort of like these big open environments and you know sneak up to get the perfect shot. But you know, I absolutely can't complain about it. Like, the original Pokemon Snap, you know, while it was a bit simplistic, the concept of it was really fantastic. So I think, you know, we bring that concept to modern game design. We you know, up the graphics and make it look pretty. I can't complain about that. It looks like it's going to be a really fun experience.
And let's face it, photo mode in games these days is a big thing. So a game where you take photos being the core, people are going to love it.
Well, hopefully it has some of that shareability, right? I mean, that was one of the things that made Pokemon Snap really great originally, was that you could take your memory card out to Toys R Us or something like that, take it to a photo station, put in your memory card and print out little stickers of the photos you've taken. So hopefully there is some sort of like actual shareability that you can then put on your Nintendo Online app or something like that and put them up on Twitter or something, or Facebook rather, or Instagram even.
Well, I mean, Switch can just share normally, so I don't think that's going to be a...
Yeah, but the problem with Switch though is that you can only share it to Twitter, and you can't put it on a phone and then, you know, edit them or anything like that. It has to go to Twitter and then you have to take it and stuff.
You can, but it's a pain in the bum to do so.
That's right, yeah. Big roundabout way of doing it.
Yeah.
What about Pokemon Smile? Anyone here have problems brushing their teeth and they need a Pikachu to help them out do that?
I mean, not so much, but I think it's like, it's a really cute idea. Like,
yeah.
We've seen like not necessarily Game Freak, but the Pokemon company as a whole really like sort of lean into the quality of life stuff. Like last year at around this time, we had, you know, Pokemon Sleep was announced.
I forgot about that.
And that's, yeah, I think everyone forgot about that. but it's like, that was designed to, you know, help you get a better night's sleep, and we should expect to hear something about that this year because it's supposed to release at some point this year. And now, you know, they've got Pokemon Smile, which is designed to help kids brush their teeth, and I don't know, Nintendo's like, and you know, the Pokemon company, they're just sort of going into like this weird space where it's like, you know, we do a little Pokemon stuff, but now, you know, we have to use our powers for good. And I don't know, I kind of dig it.
Yeah, I hope that they really go really stupid with their marketing with all of these games. You know, Pokemon Snap has just got to snap them all. Cafe Mix has got to drink them all. Smile has just got to brush them all. Just, they have to do something stupid like that, surely. That would be the absolute best.
I don't know about got to drink them all. My brain just sort of went, are you talking about blending Pokemon now to make smoothies?
Why not? Who cares? Probably. Just make more. That's fine. Pokemon Cafe Mix. Who here has been itching for a new puzzle game that isn't Puzzle League?
I mean, I'm not really sure you can even call it a puzzle game because, like, the gameplay just looks like you're swirling a bunch of Pokemon around.
Yeah,
like,
you just
like, is it really a puzzle game? It doesn't look like there's any strategy to it other than
so
just
you really
like,
are
grab
just blending
a Pokemon
them up
and start. Yeah, pretty much. But I mean, it sounds like it looks very cute. All the Pokemon have hats, which I'm definitely about.
And scarves. Some have scarves.
Some of them have scarves, yeah.
They got real hipster, that's why.
Yeah. But like, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be a free-to-play mobile game with, you know, timers on what you can do. So I probably won't go too much into it. But I mean, I'm interested to give it a go and just see how it is. Because, you know, it's Pokemon. And, you know, their last Pokemon puzzle game, which I can't even remember the name of, Shuffle, which is on 3DS and then mobile, right. Was pretty good.
Is it on Switch as well, that one?
I think so.
I think it is too.
Anyway, I can't remember.
There's so much Pokemon.
Yeah, there is. Pokemon Cafe Mix is one of those ones where I'm going to play it. I'll probably play it for like a week, like every day for 5-10 minutes for a week, and then be like, I've had my fill and move on. And I highly suspect it was developed because somebody put their kids' Pokemon toys in the washing machine and just saw them on a front loader just whirring around. And that's how we got it. Because that we
There's
know
a
that's
million
how
dollar
Nintendo
idea.
That's how Nintendo make their games. They take real life moments and make a game out of it. So I think the visuals are cool. That's what I really like the look of the game.
Well, following on from that, Luke, I hope that someone came up with Magikarp Jump when they were, you know, cleaning their fish tank and dropped the goldfish or something. They're like, oh, there's a game.
That, honestly, with that one, I don't know how that became a game, so it would not surprise me.
Or that was so ridiculously popular, though, for a while. For
or
like
if somebody just fell out of bed. But that, I think that one just capitalized on the Pokemon Go. They're like, oh, it's
probably
a new Pokemon game on mobile.
It was around that time, right?
Yeah.
And it was just a silly, like, adventure about a Magikarp wanting to jump the highest to be the best there ever was. A Magikarp with ambitions, which is something that you don't hear about often.
I can't remember. I didn't play it much after the first sort of week or so, but did you lose if he evolved? Because he's no longer
yes.
a Magikarp?
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Oh, I forgot about it. Yeah, I never played the whole lot of it again. My girlfriend played it a lot because it came out of that sweet spot time where she just got into Pokemon.
Yeah, I mean, like, these sort of, like, weird, sort of quirky games, like, I mean, that's good to see from the Pokemon company. It's a company that, you know, sort of has traditionally been very protective about how its IP is viewed. So seeing, like, weird things like, you know, Magikarp Jump and now, you know, Pokemon Blender 2020. It's
got to blend them all.
It's nice to see. Yeah.
The thing with Pokemon is, for a while there, it was like you got, you know, the mainline game and then one spin-off. And then the mainline game and one spin-off. And now it's like you get a mainline game and you get 17 varieties of spin-off to flavor the 6 months between mainline games. It's kind of insane.
Well, funny that you mentioned that. Let's jump off. Let's Magikarp jump into the next topic in that case. So our featured topic for this week, going on from the whole boatload of Pokemon news to come out this week is... how much Pokemon is too much? So I've noticed a trend, and I'm sure many other people have as well, but when I was going through this week's notes, I noticed that there has just been so many Pokemon games to come out. And in fact, I actually forgot to put Magikarp Jump on this list even. So just going over the last 5 years alone with some of the bigger games to come out, we've got last week's news, for example, with a whole bunch of Pokemon games still to come, another project being announced this week, which some people are, you know, speculating creating rumors that it might be Let's Go, you know, Silver and Gold, basically, you know, remaster of Pokemon Silver and Gold, which I'd be all for, but I'm not quite buying it. Then there's also the Pokemon Sword and Shield DLC that has just come out and still more to come. Last year, we had Pokemon Sword and Shield Original. Then two movies, Detective Pikachu and Mewtwo Strikes Back, the CG film, which is a remake of the original Pokemon movie from 99. In 2018, we had Pokemon Let's Go, Pikachu and Eevee. In 2017, we had Pokemon Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon. 2016, we had Pokemon Go plus the original Sun and Moon. And then, as Luke mentioned, there were just all sorts of smaller games along the way that have come out as well. And that's only in the last 5 years. So there has been so much Pokemon happening, and it's still to come as well. That's not including, you know, the other anime movies that just come out like every couple of years or so, and the TV series that's still going, and whatever, you know, mass media sort of crossover stuff that happens to trading card games, all that kind of stuff. The thing that's interesting about this is that this is a Nintendo property. You know, it's not necessarily developed in-house at Nintendo, but it is a Nintendo property. But Nintendo hasn't made this big of a push with their other platform, other mascots, probably since Mario in the late 80s and early 90s, with, you know, just trying to get a foothold in the video game industry with their toy marketing dominance and things like that. So I'm just curious to throw it to you two, how you feel about this, if you feel that there is too much Pokemon, or is there just the right amount of Pokemon?
I mean, like, here's the thing, like, you know, as we have down in our notes here, Pokemon is the highest grossing media franchise of all time, and, like, it's not even close. You know, it's so much more than Star Wars, so much more than the Marvel Cinematic Universe, more than Mario, more than Mickey Mouse. Like, it's gigantic. And it always kind of has been. Like, that's the thing. Like, people say, like, you know, you'll hear sometimes from, you know, sort of people in our age group, oh, wow, Pokemon's still around. But, like, Pokemon never went anywhere. It was huge in the 90s, and it was huge in the early 2000s, and then it was huge in the 2010s, and it's going to continue to be huge in the 2020s. And I mean, like, we could say, you know, it's too much, or, you know, they're going too hard on it, or they're not focusing on other things, but, like, ultimately, like, it's continuing to sell gangbusters on pretty much everything they do. Like, they haven't had a flop in such a long time. I genuinely cannot even remember the last, you know, Pokemon project that, you know, was widely seen as failing. So
that would be Hey You Pikachu on Nintendo 64. Yeah. Because it was an extremely limited release in one country.
Well, that was also 20 years ago. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, that was 2 or 3 years after the Pokemon thing kicked off. So it's been a while.
And as you, just to jump in on what you're saying there, Ollie, so as you were saying, there's a wide margin between, you know, what the highest grossing media franchise of all time is, which is Pokemon, and the second highest, which is Hello Kitty, by like $9 billion. So that's quite a wide margin.
But also Hello Kitty's been going for many, 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 many years longer.
1974, according to this Wikipedia article. So like they've got a 22-year head start.
Yeah. The thing that I find funny with Pokemon is people say, oh, there's too many games. It's like, yeah, but that's not where the money comes from. The money comes from the optional things. Like, just this week, you know, we saw China has gotten a new Pokemon-themed or Pikachu-themed power accessories for, you know, your MacBook. A couple of weeks ago, there was the Razer Pokemon Thunderbolt wireless earbuds. And then, you know, we've had Pokemon bags show up. This is the last couple of months. Pokemon bags. It was just the other week. There was a Buttermilk or something milk here in Australia, did the clothing line, the women's clothing line for, you know, dresses and leggings and tops and that. And they sold out within minutes, you know, because it's Pokemon. It was for females, which is generally not a lot of. So it's not, they're not making the money off the mainline games. They're making the money off everything else that goes with it.
Right, so just looking at the stats here, or the information here on the Wikipedia article, again, as you mentioned, Luke, so the highest grossing facet of Pokemon being, you know, this juggernaut of just entertainment properties, the highest facet of it is the licensed merchandise, which is roughly $64 billion, and the second highest being the video games, which is just $19.5 billion.
So they're making three times as much on leggings and power adapters and headphones as they are on, you know, Pokemon Sword and Shield.
And that's not including the, you know, the trading cards or the card game. The card game itself is separate. That's $11.4 billion. And then, of course, you've got the films, you know, the box office, you've got manga, you've got home entertainment, and then manga volumes and stuff like that. So, yeah, the licensed merchandise is the stuff that makes the most money. It's the backpacks and stuff.
Yeah. And, like, if you remember, like, back in sort of the early 2000s, like, it was hard to really go anywhere without seeing Pokemon. Mm-hmm. Like, it was everywhere. you know, every single storefront had something Pokemon related. And like, we saw that again when Pokemon Go released in 2016. Like, it was everywhere. Like, you couldn't escape Pokemon. But like, as I said, like, it never really went anywhere. It's been as popular as it was from day one all the way up to now. Like, it's never really dipped in popularity at all. Which is just like, any other company would just like pay any amount of money to have, you know, an ever-present franchise like that. It's nuts.
Yeah, I would say that the popularity probably exploded a bit more. It probably spiked more in the mid-2010s when Pokemon Go and stuff came out, because then just everyone had it. But yeah, you're right, it definitely was popular. And things like the Switch as well definitely helped and made it even more popular than it was before.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the games, if we stick with the games as our main focus, are there too many games? Yes. Am I going to play all the games? No. Why? Because they're not for me. Pokemon Blender is not going to be a game I'm going to sink any more than like 2 or 3 hours into, because it's just not a game for me. Free-to-play games don't resonate with me. But for somebody else who maybe doesn't get a game a week like I do, or is really into free-to-play games, that might be their thing for 6 months. So every game is going to have a market, an audience that it's going to hit, and that's what they're counting on. But they don't have to hit a bullseye with everything. They just have to hit the right bullseye every time.
Mm. So by comparison, just talking about other franchises again, Animal Crossing, you know, has just exploded in the cultural zeitgeist, you know, within the last 2 or 3 months or so. But that in itself didn't have a necessarily large marketing push by Nintendo. That was just culturally significant because people jumped on it and there was nothing else to do because of the stay-at-home orders worldwide. So people just kind of latched onto this new wholesome release and just, you know, it took on a life of its own, basically. There was, you know, not a huge amount of like backpacks and, you know, leggings and TV series and things like that to help spur it along. So that was a much more culture-driven and isolation-induced sort of popularity rather than something that was intrinsically manufactured by Nintendo like Pokemon was. But nothing else has really like taken on, like, nothing else has been quite as big this year on a Nintendo platform as Pokemon, and I don't really see that trend sort of changing. Probably like Animal Crossing probably stick around for a while, but the next Pokemon game will again cause like enormous sales, and then, you know, some other small game will come to, like, new Pokemon Snap, for example, will again increase in sales and things like that. So it's just interesting how Pokemon has really become such a huge beast, and it's almost out of Nintendo's control at this point, even more so than something like Mario and Zelda are, which are considered some of the best games on a Nintendo platform, like usually can get reviewed better than a Pokemon game, or at least are revered artistically on a console better than a Pokemon game. So I don't know, it's really interesting to see. Someone else
talking. Yeah, and it's just like it's like, you know, Nintendo isn't even really, you know, doing this themselves all that much. Like, as you said, like, it's sort of out of Nintendo's hands at this point. Like, Pokemon has, you know, its own company that, you know, Nintendo is a part of. Sure, they own a third of it in the Pokemon company. But, like, it's a snowball rolling down a hill, and there's no stopping it. Like, even if Nintendo wanted to try, I don't think they could do anything to stop the popularity of Pokemon. And like, obviously it's working for them, so they would never even try. But like, it's going to be their biggest, you know, exclusive franchise basically forever, it looks at this point.
Mm. Do you think Nintendo will eventually become Nintendo a Pokemon company?
I mean, it's hard to say, but I mean, I think it's unlikely, but, you know, maybe one day Game Freak and the Pokemon Company will go down, you know, the gotta acquire them all.
Yeah, they become Nintendomon.
Yeah.
All right, well, just running down the list here of the highest grossing media franchises of all time, according to Wikipedia, is Pokemon at an estimated $95 billion. Year of inception would be, it was 1996. Hello Kitty in 1974 is second at $86 billion. Winnie the Pooh starting in 1924 at an estimated $76 billion, which I think is interesting because it's third above Mickey Mouse and Friends, which is 1928 at $74 billion. Then we've got Star Wars, number 5, 1977 at 70 billion. And Pan Man, which I'm not at all familiar with, is roughly around the same time, 60 billion. Disney Princesses, which is 7th, starting at around in the year 2000, which is an estimated 46 billion. Shonen Jump Comics, 1968, estimated 40 billion. Then Mario at 9th, which is 1981, and that's at an estimated 38 billion. And then the MCU, Marvel Cinematic Universe, starting in 2008 at $35 billion. So there's a very wide spectrum of popular cross-media franchises here. So yeah, as big as people think the Marvel Cinematic Universe is and always complain about it being, you know, just everywhere and in your face and all that kind of stuff, it pales in comparison, to something like Pokemon.
If we get the Pokemon Cinematic Universe, I'm blaming you now.
that's been there for a long time, buddy. That's still going. They've got that's cross media as well. They've got comics, they've got TV series, and it's all part of one universe. So that's been around for a long time. All right, let's do away with Pokemon. I think we've Pokemon'd out. Let's go to games we're playing. Luke, you can start us off. What have you been playing this Fortnite?
So I played Last of Us Part 2 for review. So I'm very happy it's out because I can actually now talk about the game. Not here, but just in general. Played Burnout Paradise Remastered for review, and I love that game, so it was fun to play that again. And I've been playing the new Borderlands DLC, which is out soon, and the new Control DLC, which is out soon. And then what was the other one that I was playing? Oh, Command & Conquer as well. Remastered, playing that as well. So a lot of PC-based nice. Stuff this time.
Nice. I'm very keen for more Control DLC. I really, really loved Control.
Well, this is the big story DLC, which is good. It's not just the little sort of experimental stuff. It's the actual proper story.
Yeah. Yeah. Ollie, what about you?
Well, I've been playing Pokemon Shield. Just to bring us back around to Pokemon. Obviously, the Isle of Armor released on Friday. And I have been deep into that. It's quite short. I am going to have a review up for it in the next couple of days. But it, you know, it's a nice bit of fun, and I think like it's really what the wild area should have really been in the first place. And it is sort of like a big step towards sort of the open world Pokemon game that a lot of people are asking for.
Cool.
But also have been playing Clubhouse games because it's just so addictive. I can't stop. I'll just like, I'll open up Clubhouse games and I'll just like, oh yeah, I'll just have like one short round of like sevens and then go to bed. And then it's like 5 a.m. and I've played like 300 rounds.
I'm the same, but I'm doing Renegade. I'm on Amazing, so the third difficulty for Renegade.
All right.
And I'll get like 4 or 5, you know, really good things. And then it'll be like the CPU's turn. It'll go place a piece, and then I have to pass because I can't place a piece. Then the CPU goes, and it'll be like 8 in a row of the CPU going, and I keep getting skipped, and it's like, no.
Yeah. I swear, the AI cheats in that game. They have to cheat.
It is brutal. The first 2 levels are fine, and then by the time you hit Amazing or Impossible, it's not just adding like an extra 1 or 2 points to intelligence. It goes from like, you know, just a kindergarten kid to bloody Rain Man. It's insane how bad. How honestly, that is probably the worst thing about that game is the AI is a little too broken. It goes from pretty easy to damn near impossible over the space of one difficulty grab.
I found the same thing when I was like going through President. I got up to the impossible difficulty and I was like, there's no way you would be playing that card unless you could see every single one of my cards. Like no human would make that move. But here you are locking me out of playing a card because apparently you can just see what cards I have. But I don't know, it's so much fun.
Cool. So I've been playing Horizon Zero Dawn just after Sony's big reveal of the PlayStation 5 lineup a few days ago. And I got really excited for Horizon Forbidden West, so I went back to play Zero Dawn and platinumed it because I knew I had some straggling trophies there. And I'm finally getting back into it and playing the Frozen Wilds, which I completely missed. So getting back into doing that, which has been very good fun.
I'm so excited for that to come to PC. I don't have a lot of because like my PS4 is communal now, so like the rest of the people in my household use it like pretty much all the time. I don't really play a lot of PS4 games anymore, but like my God, I loved Horizon so much on PS4. And once it comes to PC, I don't think I'm ever going to stop playing it.
Yeah, I think it was criminally overtaken by Breath of the Wild. Maybe not criminally, justified, but it was definitely overtaken by Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, I started playing Horizon for review, and then 2 days later I got Breath of the Wild for review. And it was like, I'll start playing Zelda, and then I was like, oh, shit, I have to finish the other one. Oh, but Zelda's so good. So I play Zelda. And then, yeah, that's how it was for me. So by the time I got back to Horizon, I'd been spoiled by Zelda. So,
yeah.
I mean, like, I think a lot of people. The thing about Horizon is that, like, the exploration kind of sucks, but, like, goddamn, is the combat good. It just, it feels so good to play all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really good fun. And I've also been playing Pokemon Shield, but not the DLC, because I am still trying to actually get through the main game. I've only got, like, 5 badges. So, yeah, I sort of dip in and out of that game every couple of weeks, play it for a few hours, and then disappear and come back and realize I haven't gotten far at all. So maybe I'll get to the DLC, like, you know, next year or something. We'll see. Let's move into the eShop recommendations. So I'm going to skip this one because, unfortunately, there isn't really... there's a lot on sale, but nothing really of note that I could really recommend. It's just kind of business as usual, back to a lot of filler stuff. Ollie has a good explanation for why that might be, so I might handball over to him.
Yeah, so basically... there's sort of a limit. Once you've had a game go on sale, you have like sort of this minimum amount of time that you have to wait before you can put it back on sale. It's why you see a lot of companies like Capcom put like half of their library on sale, and then like 3 weeks later put the other half, you know, so they can sort of cycle between those two halves. But because we've had these, like, you know, these quite big sales over like the past 2 weeks, it means that all of these companies have sort of, you know, locked themselves out of any like meaningful sales sort of over the next couple of weeks, and that could change. We could see some sort of like E3 adjacent sale, but yeah, right now there's basically just whoever wasn't involved in the big sales the past few weeks is what's left. And unfortunately, I mean, I'm not going to say that these are all bad games. I haven't played the vast majority of them, but there's not really a whole lot that particularly interests me.
But what are your recommendations?
I do have recommendations for my favorite puzzle game of all time, which is Pixel Lions DX. I reviewed this a little while back. I think it was probably towards the end of 2017 when it first came out. And it is 70% off right now for $6. You can also get 500 more puzzles for an extra $4.50. And just it's so much fun. It's sort of it's hard to explain what it's like, but like you have this like huge grid, and you have to like connect colors to other colors. I don't know. It's hard to explain. Watch the trailer. But it's a good game. And you can like get probably 60 hours out of just like the first game, and then like 500 more puzzles out of the second one. So like, you know, $10.50 for what's probably going to be 80 hours of puzzling fun. I mean, hard to go wrong.
It's not bad. Well, you, Luke, what's your recommendations?
So Burnout Paradise Remastered is up there. Obviously, it's a full price game. It's $70, but it's, if you've not played Burnout, you need to play Burnout Paradise. It's just pure racing. Obviously, there's things to jump through, billboards and all that sort of stuff, but it's all about the racing. And it's, the thing that I really like is that it's not just, you know, you're here, follow this course to here. It's no, you start on the east side of the map and they say, drive to the observatory, which is in the northwest. That's it. How you get there, which route you take, is entirely up to you. So you can go the most direct route, which is through the city, which is where all the traffic is, or you can go the longer way around the lake. But, you know, then you've got to start hairpinning up the mountain to get to the top, you know. So there's a lot of freedom in how you get around, which is what I think is cool. Plus, it comes with all the DLC. So you can jump in the DeLorean lookalike car and hover and then boost. You can jump in the Dukes of Hazzard car or the Ghostbusters car, complete with the you know, ear-piercing horn that car had, or the siren, I should say. So that's one of them. Screen Cheat is on sale, down to like $3.60. It's a bit of a weird one. It's one you need to play on the TV, but it's you know, it's a first-person shooter, you know, deathmatch sort of thing, but you can't see your characters. So you got to stare at the other person's little corner of the screen to see where they are so you can hunt them down and kill them. So that old thing you used to do in four-player games and GoldenEye where you were looking to see where your friend was, this is the entire purpose of this game. It's just to do that. And then the other one, it's not out yet, but it is on sale, which is bizarre. It's Duke Nukem 3D 20th anniversary. That's out next. It's out later this week. Sorry, 24th, and it's it's down to $7.50 from its normal $15 price tag. But it comes with you know, an entirely new episode, new levels, new music, a whole bunch of all stuff, all designed by the original guys. So the original musicians came back to record new tracks. The original level designers made the new episode. You know, John St. John, who's the voice of Duke Nukem, you know, him coming back is not a big thing because he doesn't, you know, you call him up and say, hey, do the voice, and he does it. So but he's back, you know, new dialogue as well for Duke. So, you know, if you're an old school shooter fan and enjoyed Duke Nukem, he's back on Switch later this week.
Cool. Going into the release forecast, so between today, June 21st and July 5th, which is when the next episode is out. We've got on June 23rd, SpongeBob SquarePants, Battle for Bikini Bottom Rehydrated. We've got Duke Nukem 3D 20th Anniversary World Tour. Star Wars Episode 1 Racer will finally come out after that whole saga. We've also got Pokemon Cafe Mix coming as well if you're looking for something free and puzzly. The next day on June 24, we've got Ninjala.
Which is also free.
Oh, interesting. Then the day after that, on June 25th, we have Mr. Driller Drill Land. And then finally, on June 30th, we have The Legend of Heroes Trails of Cold Steel 3. So there are a few releases there that will probably appeal to someone. Oh, sorry, someone. I mean, probably, you know, at least one game will appeal to everyone, is what I meant to say. So yeah, do dip into some of those if you're looking for something new. But apart from that, that's been us for this fortnight. Thank you, Luke. Thank you, Ollie. Where can people find you? Let's start with Luke.
People can find me on Twitter at RenderMan7.
And Ollie?
You can find me on Twitter as well, at Pokebolt, CHOCOBALP.
And you can find me on Twitter at Mangello, that's MANJELL0. Be sure to follow Vooks.net, all spelled out like that, on Twitter as well. Or hit up the website Vooks.net for more Nintendo-specific news, reviews, and everything in between. Other than that, we will see you next fortnight for the next episode of the Vookcast. See you later.